So first of all, impermanence and death. We know that there are many Buddhist scriptures in Pali, Sanskrit, Tibetan, Chinese, and so on. We know that there are many Buddhist traditions, Theravada traditions, Sarvastivada traditions, Mahayana traditions, Vajrayana traditions, and so on. We know that there are very many Buddhist teachings, teachings about the cosmos, teachings about meditation, teachings about the mind, about mental states, teachings about the nature of reality, teachings about the different kinds of living beings, teachings about ethics, both personal and social, teachings even about the arts. There are all these teachings. And sometimes one is apt to get a little confused, a little bewildered by all these Buddhist teachings. And sometimes one might have thought how wonderful it would be if one could only reduce all these books to one book, one slim pocket volume that one could carry about with one all the time. How wonderful it would be if you could reduce all these multitudinous chapters to one chapter, even all these multitudinous verses to one verse, or even if one were so bold as so to think, reduce all these multitudinous, these thousands, these millions, these hundreds of millions of words just to one magic word, on which alone you could ponder and continually reflect and be sure that if you so did, you would be certain of gaining enlightenment. But I have sometimes thought that perhaps this could be done, that perhaps all the teachings could be reduced to one teaching, or at least to the one most indispensable, or perhaps I should say least dispensable teaching, the one most magic, meaningful word. And I've sometimes thought that word was impermanence. That in a way, the whole of the Buddha's teaching is contained in just that one word, impermanence. If you understand impermanence, it's almost as though you understand everything that the Buddha ever said. It's not surprising, therefore, that we're told that the trees and the birds in Sukhavati have nothing else to say to us, nothing else to sing to us, nothing else to tinkle to us than anicca, anatta, and dukkha. But one might even say that anicca, anitya, impermanence, would have been sufficient. The other two are really contained in that. If one thinks about it even a little, I think one will quickly conclude that this is indeed the case. That if we understand this one word impermanence in sufficient depth, we find that the whole of the Buddha's teaching is therein contained. It's all implied, both his practical teaching and his theoretical teaching. And very often we find in the scriptures, especially what seem to be the earlier portions of the Pali scriptures, that this truth, this insight, this understanding of impermanence is expressed in terms of the realization that whatever has a beginning has an end. Whatever goes up must come down. Whatever is born must die. If it has a beginning, then of course everything conditioned has a beginning, it must inevitably have an end. And sometimes this is expressed even more precisely, even more as it were philosophically, in the sentence, whatever has by nature an origin, that also, by nature, has an end. The end is not something accidental, not something grafted onto it. The end is inherent in it, inasmuch as it has a beginning. Its beginning is its end. The fact that it is a beginning thing means that it is at the same time an ending thing. If you're a born thing, you're a dying thing. Which is why it's sometimes said that as soon as you're born, what do? You begin to die. The process of death starts, at least philosophically, if not biologically, if not in terms of multiplication of cells, with your birth, with your conception. As soon as you're born, you begin to die. As soon as something begins, it begins, yes, to end. So this realization that whatever has by nature an origin, that also by nature has an end. This realization, the awakening of this to this fact, to this truth, is called, in traditional Buddhist language, the opening of the Dhamma Chakhu, or Dharma Chakshu, the eye of the Dhamma or Dharma, the eye, that is to say, of truth.